Hi there. Chris and I are knee-deep in solving all the world's problems, so we're going to revisit one of the earliest episodes of Tell the Damn Story, Episode 10, about how we get character into our characters. I think you'll find it interesting, not only because of the creative information it shares, but also because of the time period this was recorded, which was about 7 years ago. There was a great many things happening in our society at that particular time. And so you'll get a chance to see how the influences of society, the day-to-day lives that we live, actually impact or affect our creative process. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tell the Damn Story Revisited.
Welcome to the podcast that discusses storytelling from all angles to help you and us answer the call when the muse screams, "Tell the damn story." We'll be exploring the challenges of being creative in fiction, illustration, comics, film, and nonfiction. All right, welcome back to Tell the Damn Story. Last episode, we started talking about the bulk of it was about getting back to a story that really was birthed here on Tell the Damn Story. And I read an excerpt so we could kind of talk about how we get story out of showing different sides of a character. And we got into a conversation about how Alex Simmons's character, Blackjack, also known as Aaron Day, he doesn't have an alter ego. It's not Bruce Banner, Hulk. It's not Clark Kent, Superman. Aaron Day and Blackjack are the same person. And it's just what I had said to you was that I feel like Aaron Day always presents himself as he is to society, a society that was basically against him. Wow, things haven't quite changed, have they?
Oh God, that was
And
yeah.
but he had the talents and the strength of spirit to insist that he be dealt with as an individual. And in those times when he wasn't, one of the great things about Blackjack is that there is a wealth of resources, of abilities, of reasoning, and of talents that can come out of Aaron Day. Ultimately, into the Blackjack aspect of him. And you were about to talk to me or talk to us about some work you were doing in that area. So what were you talking about?
Well, first, I great intro, by the way. I did also want to connect to the fact that one of the things we talked about in the previous episode was also the appeal of this character outside of this country, because we were talking about perceptions of people of color in this country as and how they are seen outside this country, and we already know there are troubles all over the place. So that was one of the things, and perception. And how I create the characters that I create, that's a big, it's a big mixing bowl that I sort of dig in with both hands. One time, we were talking. Tim was talking about how he sees Blackjack as he's drawing him, and what he thinks the character is about, and the amount of eloquence versus violence, and all of that. And you were just talking about Aaron in terms of how it's not Bruce Wayne and Batman or Superman and Clark Kent or Bruce Banner and Hulk. It's Aaron Day, who is Blackjack, as well. And so, to me, a lot of what I do is try and build a character who happens to carry this particular name. And then I look at the character's history, their bio, I look in which I create, when I create these characters, I create a bio, where are they from? What are they about? What do they want? Who are they connected to? Friends, enemies, family, all of that stuff. Because the more I know about the character, the easier it is to write them in whatever story I'm doing. I have a better sense of how they'll react to things, what they want to do, or how they'll be able to do it or not be able to do it. So one of the things in working with you that, on this next anthology where you were working on Red Star, you brought in Miriam and really sort of connected to her past and Aaron and all of that. I went and looked at the the other two other supporting characters from the first story, Second Bite of the Cobra, which is Red and Bo. Red being an overweight, stringy, long-haired, basically he's a fat man. He's a fighter, and actually works
big boned.
Yeah, his weapon is a crossbow. I mean, he can use other weapons, but his weapon of choice is his crossbow. And Bo is a shaved head Native American. He's Cherokee from the United States. And they're partners. They ride together, if you will. Not quite the Lone Ranger and Tonto, you know, the image, but they ride together. But, you know, whereas the Lone Ranger and Tonto come from more of a pure place in their creations, Red and Bo have baggage and demons and so forth. And I know these aspects of their life. So when I went to do a story, a short story with Aaron and Red and Bo, I didn't feel, the idea came to me and I didn't feel like, oh yeah, I want to see them in battle and how they function together. I wanted to really take this opportunity to show the reader, the audience, and the Blackjack fans an aspect of this relationship between Red and Aaron in this particular scene I'm going to read that you might not expect, or you might have been waiting for, but I know that was a part of the dynamics between them. And I felt like, you know, to me, this was going to be the exciting, dangerous arena, was putting them in this space. So the story takes place in this really hole in the wall, this flea bag, disgusting dive, this thing that functions loosely as a flop house in a foreign country where they've just been on a mission. And Red and Bo, you know, because they're not forced to be together now, Aaron and the group. So Red and Bo have gone about their business, and Aaron gets a message from Bo to come to this place because Red has been there for days, and it's not good. And Aaron eventually goes in to meet with him, and this is a part of, and it's just one page. I'm just going to read this one moment, one little peek into the character. Red and Aaron have already had some words, and Aaron's very cool, very chilled, just very stonewall in a way as he's listening to some of what Red is saying. And this part comes up. We did this here thing, sort of like a fox hunt. Yeah. Wicked sneer seemed to cut a gash across his face, exposing stained teeth. Yeah, a fox hunt, except with niggers. Sport. Fun. Yeah. Red paused. What else was there for us to do? Aaron's eyes narrowed. He never found it. Well, hounds never consider the feelings of a fox. Raccoons. Red took another hard swallow from a half-empty bottle. Nope. Never did. He didn't either. His eyes were bleary, yet he seemed to gaze off into some far, murky, gray memory. He did it more than once. Lots of times. Feel that low. Gotta find something that's lower. Got to. Else you're thinking, I'm it. Lowest damn thing on God's green earth. I can't be thinking that. I can't! Red shouted. His voice was a hoarse shriek. Spittle flew from his mouth. As he lost his balance, it stumbled against the wall next to where Aaron was standing. Aaron didn't move. He continued to lean against the door, his arms folded across his chest, his steely gaze locked on the drunken man who more than once had fought beside him. After a few seconds, Red leaned his head against the wall and chuckled. You know the joke? He asked. Aaron didn't respond. I didn't need to be stronger than anybody, or even smarter. I just needed to know that I wasn't the only ugly, dirt-poor, fatherless fat boy in the county.
used to say, "Your mama must have got real friendly with somebody's prize hog, pig boy." That's what they call me. Every damn day of my life. Right up till I run off.
Red leaned in closer to Aaron. Breath a sickly sour wave of liquor. Meals he couldn't keep down.
Know how I knew I'd done the smart thing?
Choked back a sob.
Cause nobody came looking for me.
That's the end of that.
Damn. Wow. I have an interior thing and an exterior thing. You get to it with this guy, you know? Makes me want to rewrite all the shit, all the stuff I have from word one. You bastard, you! You killer! You! Ah!
Oh, man.
Now, I also have to admit, and I'm not looking to offend anybody, but part of it just, you know, screams to me the Confederate flag and all of the things hitting the news, the headlines these past 2-3 weeks. And, you know, there are people down south who try to justify it in every single way, but that's the other side. This pus, this spiritual soul bruise that is coming out of Red in this story at this moment in this scene is that dark underside of any kind of lame justification that they have for that symbol of slavery and of the, you know, something that should have been put in a museum and maybe, you know, in a war chest long, long, long ago. And I believe, you know, I've gotten into some arguments on Facebook and in other places about all of this stuff, whether it's the Confederate flag or whether it's my belief that, you know, there's racism, of course, there's murder, there's violence. But for me, all of that is tinged with a mental health issue. Not an excuse, doesn't negate the racism, doesn't negate the violence, doesn't negate the murder, doesn't negate the pedophilia or rape or whatever. It is part of what's wrong with our country, what's wrong with our species. You know, they say the thing that separates us from the animals is that we can think. Apparently not as well as we should. And no. I think that for people to overlook that, you know, all of this is an integral part of what we as a species need to get past and get over. Greed is part of it too. I don't want to miss that because greed, I think, contributes to all this other stuff. But you so well got into that. That idea that, you know, it's the germ for me, it's the germ, the birth of racism, is that you just, you know, you didn't feel well about yourself and you needed to be able to point at someone else to dig yourself out of the hole.
I mean, obviously I agree that, you know, racism is, I love the word you used, pus, earlier. Racism is a disease. I've always thought of it as a disease, as a horrible, sometimes infectious disease. And it's one I've never wanted to catch. And I've had to admit, as I grew up and certain parts of my life, I had to admit when I seemed to be coming from on a particular opinion or in a particular experience where I was coming from someplace other than one human being to another, when I suddenly made, wait a minute, what am I thinking here? What is this about? Where did that come from? In my youth, American-born blacks used to have certain attitudes about people from the West Indies or Jamaica or Africa. And, you know, I didn't think I had that because I certainly wasn't practicing it. I certainly wasn't lines that were coming out of my mouth. But I remember an incident came up when I was around 15, and I had this feeling that came over me, and I'm thinking, whoa, where did that come from? And I realized that it had just been this subtle, it's like you caught a tickle in your throat, I feel a cold coming on. It was that sort of thing. And wait a minute, let's back that thought up. Let's filter that through thinking. Where is the rationale in that? Why did I even come up with that stuff? Where did that come from? And thinking, like you said, we're not thinking as well as we should, because that kind of thinking has also worked as justification for abuse, men abusing women, for a lot of other nonsense that we as a society have done, not just in this country, but across the globe. And it's like, okay, you've been raised thinking it's a part of your culture, or it's been in your household mindset for two generations, three generations, and this is what we're supposed to do. Well, you know, think again. Think mm-hmm. again. You know, how did you feel when that was being dumped on you? You didn't like it. You didn't want it. It pissed you off. Well, if you're that pissed, is that why you're now doing it to somebody else? And if so, maybe we need to flush the system. So, you know, it's one of the reasons why I don't want to embrace and suckle on the nipple of bigotry. You know, I can be pissed at bigoted people, whether they're white or whatever, coming at me. And I can be pissed about them being, you know, unfair and the horrible things that they do to other people. Absolutely. But then I'm going to think through, what am I going to do about it? You know, how do I express that? What can I do to fix some portion of that or mend something else if I can't affect that? What way can I spend my time on this earth? As a writer, going back to what we're doing here, as a writer, this is one of those wonderful opportunities. You get to step in front of a computer or a clean sheet of paper, and you have an implement in your hand or at your fingertips that enables you to tell stories, to talk about your feelings if you're doing nonfiction, to talk about your feelings through fiction, to create characters who are on both sides of the line and get people talking and discussing about things. That's a powerful tool for anybody to have, to utilize, you know, and you hope that the people behind that tool have some integrity. Not all of them do. But, you know, when I did this thing with Red, like an actor, because I've been that too, you get into that head. You know, you take the stuff that you've been, the slander that's been thrown at you, you take the times you've heard people express that kind of vile venom. You also take the times you've heard people express how they purge themselves of that. And you take the analytical approach to what fostered that. If you grew up in a poor, dirt poor area where you had squat and everybody looked like you, then what would they pick on? Well, they're going to pick on you because of your size, or they're going to pick on you because of something your family does or doesn't do, or your daddy's not in the picture, your mama's, you know, sleeping around. They're going to find something to make you feel small so they feel big. And so that, to me, was all organic material that I knew was a part of Red's life. You know, the next chance I get, I'll do something about Bo's life. Right. And it's one of the unspoken, up until this point, it was one of the unspoken reasons why Red was able to function with Aaron. There's more to his story that comes out in this one short story. There's a lot more coming. So I'm glad you enjoyed that portion.
And you wanted, and I wanted to see, I want to see in this story, you know, how he goes from that memory. You know, he was in that at the, what was expressed in that scene was his reality at some point in his life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he got out, and that's when he knew he was right. He had done the smart thing because no one came looking for him. Where do you go from there to someone who can ride with a Cherokee and fight alongside an African-American soldier of fortune. That, to me, that's a fantastic, fantastic tale to hear. So I'm looking forward more to that.
Well, I just want to say, and I have to thank you, a couple of other people, but more specifically and more recently, I have to thank you for cattle prodding me into finally sitting down and writing some of these short stories that have been buzzing around in my head for 15 years.
Well, I believe in you, and I believe in Blackjack, and I think that when you do the work speaks to other people. So it's just in service of my own selfishness that I want to read more Blackjack.
I love
and
you
that
too,
I believe, man. You know, and we've heard so many stories that this touches people, you know?
Mm.
I do want to try and segue all that into, if it's okay, I have a page that I'll read to you. Now, understand, last episode, having read my stuff, which I have gone through 3 times, and then hearing you absolutely blow my stuff away, God bless you, I do this trepidation. But I think for the theme of this episode, it makes a lot of sense. We were affected by the... Ferguson and by Baltimore. But then when Charleston happened, it boiled over for me, for you, for Tim. And we suggested and discussed mutually talking about those things for an episode. And it wound up being 2 very interesting episodes. We can't promise everything to people who watch this show, but we can always promise it's going somewhere interesting. So... the follow-up to that was that I wanted to do something with Blackjack where racism escalated something out of control very quickly, and then to explore where Blackjack would go with that. And it became the price of a cup of coffee, which I have gotten preliminary okey-doke from you. And we're still going to work on it. So in a similar vein of trying to give people a little insight and that kind of stuff into Aaron's life and then the world around it, you know, we'll give this a shot. Again, work in progress, right? So this is the opening of The Price of a Cup of Coffee. During the rare times that he got up to Harlem, Aaron Day always included Samson's Luncheonette in his rounds. Good coffee. Great pie. Top-notch company. Aaron enjoyed the neighborhood talk Mr. Samson offered, his bald head gleaming in the bright afternoon light. Never asked Aaron a question about his business, never requested tales of adventure, never judged anyone. Mr. Samson was one of the most steady sources of positive news in Harlem. And he made everyone feel right at home, even the world-traveling adventurer known as Blackjack. The Stevenson boy got himself an invitation to play for both the Black Bombers and the Cubans. I hear he's leaning towards the Bombers, Mr. Sampson said, wiping a glass to an immaculate sparkle. Ain't that something now? I will have to catch a game if he signs on, Aaron smiled. Which team? Makes no difference to me as long as I get to see a local kid play pro ball. Mr. Sampson grinned broadly. You got that right, Mr. Day. Donna, the young waitress, brought over a fresh slice of apple pie and placed it in front of Aaron. Here you go, sir. Thank you, Donna, Aaron smiled. The waitress could only nod before she fled back into the kitchen. Aaron made a note to work on getting her more comfortable around him. Mr. Sampson shrugged like he heard Aaron's thoughts. Not many customers both thank her and give Donna the respect of addressing her by name, Mr. Day. Trust me, she appreciates. She just needs to learn how to handle it. Does she know that she deserves respect? We working on that every day. Aaron nodded as the luncheonette's door banged open and a lanky teenager rushed in. Rabbit, you about to break my establishment bouncing in like that, boy. Mr. Sampson chuckled. Rabbit Lopez was a sprinter at Benjamin Franklin High School in East Harlem and ran deliveries for Autumn Riley's newsstand, whenever he was breaking whenever he wasn't breaking track records. Sorry, Mr. Sampson. Autumn just told me I should bring Mr. Day his paper is all, Mr. Rabbit said quickly. The kid did everything fast, like an over-caffeinated gazelle. He dropped a copy of the New York Times and the Herald Tribune in front of the World Traveler. Aaron gave him coins to cover the papers, plus a tip for himself. Thank you, mister. Thank you, Rabbit, Aaron nodded, already perusing the headlines. And thank Autumn for me. Will do! Rabbit bellowed as he raced out the door and ran right into two uniformed patrolmen. Why you running, boy? What'd you steal? One cop yelled, whipping out his nightstick and bringing it down on Rabbit's shoulder. Resisting gets you more, boy! The other cracked him across the legs. Rabbit went down, clutching his knee. Aaron was off his stool and through the door in a blur. Wait! The kid's a deliver! The first strike of the nightstick took Aaron completely by surprise. Instincts moved his head so it was only a glancing blow across his temple, but he still stumbled towards the street. The second swing of that weapon, however, brought out an entirely different response. I'll leave it there.
Thanks.
And the idea was to... I mean, they were just having a neighborhood moment, you know. I imagine that for a lot of people in Ferguson, for a lot of people in Baltimore, for a lot of people who weren't in that church, but around the church, chaos just erupted. And, you know, I just, I you know, and I've had this conversation with a couple of people who they have an agenda on how to handle these things. And my only agenda is to keep talking about it. Keep talking about it, keep being as pure about it as you can to spread the idea that there's a better way to do things.
And yeah, what seems to be, and again, not to turn the show into a political thing, but I think, you know, once again, because I still sort of cringe when people say that art is politics, it's political. I think that art can be political. I think that art sometimes is used definitely to promote political agendas or whatever, but ultimately, art is art, and it's going to be what it is in a particular situation. So, I think what you've conveyed here is a slice of life as it was lived. I mean, we may be using fictional characters, but the kind of things that happened in Ferguson and in Charleston and so many other locations in just the past year is the kind of things that used to happen in the 50s, 40s, 30s, 20s, Civil War time, name it. Some of it even more heinous and more horrible. And the lesson that we seem to have difficulty learning is all that does is fuel the fire. It doesn't give you control over a people. It pisses them off more. And as the world is changing, you know, and people are fighting it, but the world is changing. It's not all one color anymore. You know, it's an amalgam. It's a melting pot. It's what the globe is once you start opening commerce doors and things like that. So if you can't adjust to that, yeah, you're going to feel like you need to be someplace in an enclosed, gated community.
You're going to do the kind of things that we see these patrolmen doing, or some of the like the kid in the cop in the Texas pool video. I think that is the core of what we need to do in the country, which is reflect and ask ourselves why, you know,
and have these dialogues
to bring it back to that scene with Red. Us seeing all that background into Red gives us insight. Insight, understanding is the key to advancement for humanity. And
no argument.
And
I will also say this too. And again, tying it into, as we're doing, tying it into spoken and written word.
Mm-hmm.
People who are in an environment where reading and dialogue is not the norm for them, it is not nurtured, it is not put before them in a way that helps them see that it's beneficial, have then no form of communication other than hostility. You know, because everything else that a normal human being is going through that gets pent up, that you might be able to talk about or argue about or write about or draw, you're not doing it. So it's all boiling inside of you. So, you know, I'd just like to, because I'm sure this is another one of those episodes that could turn into three episodes. So I just want to say that the scene that I wrote, and there's more material coming, I think it's great that we are able to look at our characters as something more than one-dimensional or two-dimensional. I think, again, it goes back to the statement about what is quality writing and storytelling that will not only get people to pick up the book, look at the cover, read the first few lines or whatever, get them to come into it, but get them to stay and to come back for more. And so I think, again, as artists, you know, all I can ever say is, you know, do your best, create from the heart if you can. And as writers in particular, you know, just do everything you can to tell the best damn story that you can.
Yeah. And it's the why. You know, I read recently that one of the keys that, you know, writers have to have, and people are trying to sell their artwork, has to have, is the why they do it. And I think what we're talking about is this is why we do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because this stuff has to be said, has to be discussed, has to be explored. You know, it's why we tell the damn story.
Okay, well, we're both wordsmith, and I appreciate that. So, right. Until next time, what do you
keep
have to
going,
say?
Keep going, finding your way to
tell the damn story.
If you want to hear more about the show or any of us, go to tellthedamnstory.com.